Hi there, folks. Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight Show. This is Tony, and I'm coming to you from New Zealand. And it's a new year, 2026. And today I have a regular guest back, obviously for the first time this year. It's good to have you back again today, Leo.
Yes, happy new year to you, Tony, and all of your viewers.
And you too. And let's just be frank, it's already only 7 days, or for you, 6 days into the new year. And a lot's happening already, making 2026 look like it's going to be a very eventful year.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly unleashed 2026 with a bang. I mean, I had predicted that it was going to be a year of chaos. Well, we haven't been disappointed so far, that's for sure, with all what went down in Venezuela over the weekend. And, continues to unfold there. We were led to believe that it was a so-called clean operation. You know, they went in, they went out, they got their man, they kidnapped him, they brought him to New York to try him in the Southern District of New York, which is, by the way, notoriously one of the most corrupt judicial circuits in the United States. So I wouldn't expect a fair trial. But now we're starting to get, news leak out that 80 people were killed in the operation, including apparently most of his personal security force. We're still getting details out of Venezuela.
The thing is, if you don't support what Trump's done there, then people will label you a leftist, a Democrat,
right,
because they're all crying foul, but you can go have big question marks around this and not be a leftist and not be a Democrat, and realize that, hang on a second, something more's going on here. It's not all about drugs, as we've been told, and it's not even just all about oil. And I think you've hinted at it, something that I picked up, and as well as that we're looking at a greater American Union, Trump's attempts at that seeming to be at least partly what's behind all of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know what exactly is in President Trump's mind. He's a very unpredictable character. Even his actions and his words are, all over the spectrum. He could say something one day and then the total opposite a day or a week later. But if we go by the actions and the rhetoric, it appears that he has designs on more than just Venezuela. He's ratcheted up the talk about taking Greenland.
Yeah.
He's made threats against the leader of Colombia.
Yeah.
Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Canada, and the leader of Colombia, by the way, said, come and get me today. So, he's apparently met his match on the rhetorical level with that character.
Right.
But I think he's serious about Greenland. I don't think he's serious about Canada, because I think that country is pretty much dominated by globalist forces to the extent that they would do, at least with the current government, whatever the globalist talking points would want them to do. They are led by Mark Carney, who's a former Bank of England governor. I mean, how much more in the belly of the beast could you get comes to the globalists than that?
Bank of England and Bank of Canada, not just one.
Correct.
But, yeah. Exactly. It,
well, not that there's any difference between the two, but but right. So that country is already fully on board and fully captured by globalist interests. I don't know that you would need any formal, maybe at some point, some sort of treaty. I don't know, North American Union like treaty, but that wouldn't be a high priority, because they've already been subjugated by globalist interests. A country like Venezuela, which is extremely rich in resources. Some people say it has the greatest amount of oil reserves under the ground there in Venezuela in the entire world.
Yeah.
It also has vast gold deposits. Yeah. And we all know what's happened with the value and the price of gold lately, right?
And silver. I mean, look at
And silver, right. Yeah. And not to mention they have lithium and other minerals. Mm. So that is a key piece of real estate in this assemblage, which that is the biggest issue. It oil is important, but I don't think it's all about the oil. Yeah. It's about assembling the North American technate. And this is an idea that goes back to the 1930s when a group calling themselves or referred to as Technocracy Inc., these were the first original technocrats.
Yeah.
Mostly they came from mostly the United States and Canada, and they had a stronghold among the professors at Columbia University. And their whole intention, if we look back at their writings and their words, was to assemble a North American union, so to speak, only much bigger than just Canada, United States, and Mexico, which is, as we recall, that was what was on the board back when George W. Bush was president. Yeah. And he had the meeting of the three amigos, himself, Prime Minister Harper in Canada, and Vicente Fox, at that time president of Mexico. They had met, I think, in Texas or someplace, and talked about this idea of a North American Union. And of course, it didn't fly at the time, and they had to back off. But it appears now that they're shooting for the moon and going for the whole ball of wax with something much bigger than the North American Union, and that's this thing called the North American Technate. And it was the idea pushed by the early technocrats in the 1930s and then revived by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski back in the 1970s when they formed the Trilateral Commission. And so, a lot of President Trump's, there's several in President Trump's inner circle, you know, who are trilateralists and do espouse to the whole idea of technocracy, which is the, for those in your audience who are not familiar with that term, I would bet most of them are, but for those who are not, a technocracy is a rule by professionals professional bureaucrats, scientists, engineers. People think about Dr. Fauci and you have your quintessential technocrat. He was basically making policy during COVID. He was telling the president of the United States what he should do and not do. And that is how, that was a beta test for technocracy 101, where you basically turn the reins of government over to these so-called professionals, these scientists and engineers, and they are the ones who, dictate policy, and the politicians are just figureheads who carry it out. And so, they learned a lot during COVID, and I think they're ready to go to the next step and put this thing together in this North American technate. Exactly how it will take shape, whether it will involve formal treaties or just some sort of loose coalition of countries, I don't know. It's too early to predict. But I think this is the grand vision and the bigger goal of what we saw go down in Venezuela over the weekend.
I think it's very interesting that Trump was chosen for this particular time, because I've always believed he was chosen, selected rather than elected by the elite. But because he's the personality that he is, full of bluster and also appearing to be very strong-willed, he can do all of these things and call all of these shots and make it sound like it's him doing it. And it's believable that people go, it's Donald Trump's agenda, when I don't think it is. I think Donald Trump's fulfilling someone else's agenda. He's just the perfect man to do it, or give it a go and test the waters for a lot of these things. And when you mention Greenland, I mean, he's been very loud about that now since this Venezuela thing, talking about taking over Greenland. And of course, then you get the Danes speaking back against it and saying, well, if you invade Greenland, then you're basically NATO's dead and all of that type of thing. So it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out regarding not only Venezuela, but those other countries you mentioned, and especially Greenland.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it really was quite astonishing to watch it go down over the weekend. I mean, to swoop in with the Delta Force and kidnap the head of state of a sovereign country. I mean, there's not a lot of precedent for that. I know something similar went down with Manuel Noriega in, what was it, 1991 or something like that? But even then, they had more evidence on Noriega of illicit drug trafficking than they do on Maduro. I mean, even if you look at the indictment against Maduro, there's really nothing there except for like guilt by association and innuendo type statements. There's nothing like, you know, okay, President Maduro met at, you know, 12 o'clock on such and such a date with, you know, some cartel member and discussed, you know, trafficking this or that or the other drug. You know, there's no details in there whatsoever like that that would tie him directly to narco drug trafficking. Not to say that he isn't getting some sort of, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he was getting some sort of cut off of some trafficking of drugs somewhere. Because I don't think he's a straight up, you know, great guy. I'm not trying to argue that. I just don't think that he is anywhere in the top five of, you know, heads of state who are involved in drug trafficking. You know, nothing like the Hernandez guy, former president of Honduras, who was a notorious cocaine trafficker, and President Trump just pardoned him a few weeks ago. I mean, so I just don't believe this is about drugs. I think it's going to, basically what I say in my article, I encourage people to go over there to my Substack and read it, but I think this is going to blow up in our faces. I really do. You know, all these videos going around on social media about Venezuelans, you know, celebrating and partying in the streets. We're already finding out that a lot of those are fake videos. Some of them are, of old events, like one was at a soccer match, believe it or not, from a year ago or something, where Venezuelans were celebrating a win on the soccer field. And that's going around saying that's them celebrating the overthrow of their president. So, you know, I mean, and even if the celebrations are legitimate, which I don't believe most of them are, in fact, there's authentic video coming out now of actual protests in the streets of Caracas and Venezuela that have larger crowds than the ones that seem than the authentic ones that are of people there, because some I think did celebrate the initial overthrow. But these crowds gathering now to protest are much larger, and they include, I saw some interviews from people on the street at these protests. Some of them were very much not big fans of their president, Maduro, but they said they have a much bigger problem with the United States coming in and kidnapping their president and sending him off to stand trial on foreign soil than they did with Maduro himself, that this can never be supported. It's humiliating. I mean, think about it. If we here in America, think about it this way. None of us liked Joe Biden during his 4 years. He was kind of an embarrassment. He was dementia'd. What if the Chinese had swooped in with their equivalent of the Delta Force and snatched him up, put him in a helicopter, and flew him to Beijing to stand trial for some nebulous crimes of their own imagination? Now, how would we feel about that? I would not be on board with that, even though I was one of Joe Biden's biggest critics. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I do think this is going to blow up in our faces. I do believe not just the people of Venezuela, but the people of Latin America in general are now going to have their worst fears realized. I mean, there was already a lot of anti-American sentiment in Latin America just because of our history. We have intervened in countries repeatedly over the last 150 years. One of the most notorious ones was the United Fruit Company in Guatemala. I mean, for goodness sakes, go research that one and you'll find out how the U.S. government basically uses the CIA to go in and overthrow governments to pave the way for business opportunities for, you know, or keep the business opportunities greased for our largest corporations. And so just insert Exxon in the place of United Fruit Company and you have what's going on in Venezuela today. Okay. This is nothing new. It's just more dramatic. And I think in some ways, as I said earlier, and I think it just cements and makes the point in people's minds that the United States can't be trusted. It is going to serve its own interests. It's going to come into these countries and put its own person in power and try to extract the minerals for the benefit of the United States and its corporations. And so I don't think that's going to fly well in Venezuela. I don't think it's going to fly in the neighboring countries of Colombia, in Brazil, or in Central America. And so imagine if Donald Trump compounds this mistake, and I do believe it was a mistake, by stationing U.S. troops, a substantial contingent of U.S. troops in Venezuela. I could see a potential scenario go down where they start coming under armed attack in that country, not just from Venezuelans, but from people who hate America swooping in from all of these other Latin American countries, okay? And we end up bogged down in a quagmire similar or worse than some of the others we've experienced over the decades, starting with Vietnam.
Well, if it was any other country in the world that had done this, what the U.S. has just done, there'd be a huge outcry. I mean, any other 100%. Country went into another sovereign country, kidnapped the prime minister and then or president and said, right, we're taking over that country. We're going to keep the resources and use it to fund their rebuilding or whatever.
Where have we heard that? Where have we heard that one before?
Over and over. Yeah. Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan,
Iraq and George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was elected to be the antithesis of the establishment Republican person in the office of the presidency, George W. Bush. He was elected to be the opposite of George W. Bush, especially in the realm of foreign policy. People had had enough of these foreign interventions, enough of the nation building, enough of the debt that gets put on our watch and our grandchildren's watch, paying for these huge contracts, no-bid contracts that go out to companies like Halliburton to come in and rebuild a country after we bomb it into smithereens. I mean, that's why we have a $38 trillion debt, because we assume the role of the world's policeman. And I would argue that it's even worse than that now. When you pull off an operation which militarily looks brilliant. Okay. I don't have an argument with anyone in the U.S. military. They're just doing what they were ordered to do, and they did it very professionally. But the people who make these decisions at the Pentagon and the Department of State, and let's face it, the buck stops with the president, they are committing us to hundreds of millions of dollars, not just to rebuild the nations that we invade, but to ante up the defense budget, which is now sitting at just a hair under $1 trillion a year, okay, which dwarfs all of the other countries' military budgets. you would not need to spend $1 trillion a year on your defense, which I believe they more accurately named it now the Department of War, because that's what it is. It's not a Department of Defense. We don't use it just to defend our country. We use it to go around the world and intervene in the internal affairs of other sovereign nations. We say we care about national sovereignty. We only care about our own, apparently. Okay. We totally disrespect the sovereignty of lesser countries. We sometimes might doesn't make right. You can use your military power responsibly or irresponsibly. I would argue that this was a decision that was irresponsible and does not serve the interests of the United States of America, because it's going to end up not only being very expensive, and the need to have $1 trillion defense budgets because you're acting as the world's policeman, but you're also you're feeding the anti-American hatred that is building across the world right now when you do things like this. And while it may look good in the short term, you got all these flag-waving, chest-beating Americans saying, oh, aren't we amazing? Wasn't this beautiful? A beautiful operation. Over the long term, what you're actually going to see is increased anti-Americanism, and there's no way that can be good for America. In fact, in my article, I advise people not to travel right now. You know, with this type of action, how do you know that you're in, you know, you go to Spain on vacation and you go to a restaurant and, oh, it's American. We're going to serve them a nice looking meal and it may even taste good, but we're going to slip something in there that's going to make them really sick, because we're sick of America's arrogant attitude going off invading foreign countries and taking out their elected leaders. Okay. And you could argue that, oh, he wasn't duly elected. It was an illegitimate election in Venezuela. You know what? We've had illegitimate elections in this country as well. That does not justify going in and taking out the leader. Like I said, Joe Biden, many of us don't think was duly elected in a fair and square election. Would we have wanted the Chinese to come in here, take him out, and give us their leader? No. So it's a simple matter, Tony, of the golden rule. That's why it amazes me when I see Christians defending this type of foreign policy. Do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. It's really very simple. And when you violate that godly rule, don't be surprised when you get the blowback.
You know, I have another kind of angle with this too. I see that I believe Trump has authorized spending, I think, $7.4 billion on a metal smelting facility, and a new one, and they will need it to make all the stuff for the technocrats, you know, all the AI stuff, everything that needs metals, the U.S. defense system, like, you know, your F-35s, all those things. Now, every one of those things needs silver, for example. And silver is now in very short supply, and especially since January 1st, China brought into law there an export ban of silver out of China, basically. And if there's a war between China and the US as to who gets ascendancy in all this technocracy stuff, AI and robotics and all that kind of thing, and defense, and everything needs copious amounts of silver. And as all this is developing, more and more silver is being needed. And so Venezuela, you mentioned, is a resource-rich country, not just oil, but other things like silver that is needed for U.S. defense or Department of War or whatever in the future to build things. And so that's not being spoken of. It's all about either drugs or oil. But if they're looking at the future to control the resources needed to make this great technocratic society with AI and transhumanism and all the other things, then this is a strategic move to sew up Venezuela, and, you know, surrounding countries could come into it too. For the US, for the future, for what's needed to, build all this technology. And how about Greenland? I mean, what's the resources of Greenland?
Yeah, they're also very resource rich in Greenland. But that also, what you're saying is very true. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the North American technate.
Yeah.
The technocrats, in their vision of, in the way that they would love to remake society, they want to move it from a monetary based system, which is based on currencies, to a resource based system where you might have a digital programmable currency, which in my view is not really a currency at all. Mm-hmm. It's a fake currency based on what they say it is. But this digital programmable currency will have to be backed by something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where your resources come in, your gold, your silver, your oil, to give so-called value to something that is actually of no value. It's just a blip on a computer screen. There's no coins. There's not even a paper dollar to, store up in your house. I mean, the whole idea of money historically is it's a storehouse for wealth. You can count your coins. You can count your bills, whatever. And you can have it independently in a bank if you want, but you could also have it on your person, in your wallet, in your house, under your mattress. There's a physical representation of stored wealth. The new system that is being designed and implemented as we speak is not like that. It is literally totally controlled from the outside. You will have no control over your so-called money. They can turn it on. They can turn it off. They can make it applicable at only certain places or for certain products. I mean, look at PayPal. That's a good example. You can't buy certain things with your PayPal account. They won't let you buy a gun, a firearm. They won't let you buy ammunition for a firearm. During COVID, they would not let you purchase certain medicines like ivermectin or NAC. You know, NAC, that's I forget what it stands for, but it's a very basic supplement. That's been around for years, and it helps build your immune system. You literally could not buy that with your PayPal. I don't think you still can buy it today with your PayPal account. You have to use your credit card, and use actual dollars. So, this is the way they want to make all money, to where they can decide what you can spend it on, where you can spend it, and how much. And, if you don't see the truth, folks, and where it's leading, open your eyes. I mean, it is literally being implemented as we speak in various countries. It's already here in some respects. It's just the old system is operating in tandem with the new. But that's how it always works. You'll have the two side by side for a while, but eventually they'll take away the traditional money and leave you only with the digital CBDCs, stable coins, crypto, whatever they want to call it. That will be the new medium of exchange. There will be no more dollars, no more cash, no more regular credit card exchanges or even debit cards. It will be your Apple wallet, your PayPal wallet, all of these different modicums that they have. They may merge them all into one, or they may just allow there to be several choices, but one of the choices will no longer be cash.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you may know, but I think, isn't it 2029 in the UK that you have to have digital ID by 2029, or basically you can't actually even work.
I'm not aware of the date that is the deadline, but you're correct that you will not be able to work in the UK without a digital ID. And the digital ID, I've always thought, would come before the full implementation of the digital money.
And
so far, that seems to be the scenario in all the countries where it's going down. They implement the digital ID first, and then they tie that digital ID in with your bank account, okay? And they gradually add all of your personal data, your health records, your job history. Everything will be on that digital ID. That's the priority to get in place first. And Alaska, by the way, is the state that I think is going to be the first to implement it here in America. Other states are working on it as well. I think Alaska is just being the most upfront about it. I would bet that every state is at some is partially down the road towards planning for a digital ID right now.
Yeah, and of course New Zealand is the same. The plans for this and the talks of CBDC and all of that is in the pipeline here too. Though it hasn't gone as far as some other countries yet by a long way, but it's happening all over the world, isn't it? That the digital ID is trying to be pushed and implemented, and the talks of CBDCs or some equivalent that might come under a different name, but they need to be tied in together for it to really work. You have to have a digital Yes. ID in order for you to be able to have a digital currency.
Correct. And in order to have a true social credit scoring system, you need both.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And just back to the whole silver thing briefly, you know, I believe that we're seeing the price of silver going skyrocketing, and I think it's going a long way further than what it is now. I don't think we've even scratched the surface of where it's going to go. And as I mentioned earlier, that's because there is a shortage of silver and there's a war over it now in terms of who gets what, because it's needed for all that technocratic infrastructure and all those AI type things and data centers and solar panels, and every single one of those needs masses of silver, or electric vehicles or whatever it is. They all need a ton of it. And then you've got, you know, there's been a price suppression scheme for a long time, and people have blamed JP Morgan and all that for it. And the truth is JP Morgan is the biggest holder of physical silver out there. I think like at least 750 million ounces and growing of silver, and they've been partnering in this thing that Trump has, this venture, I think, in Texas, where they're going to be smelting all the metals for the future for all of this. So it's setting up for the whole system to become this technocratic thing where humans are almost unnecessary. You don't need humans for working and all that, because it'll all be AI right. and robots and whatever. And so what right now we're seeing is this massive push to send us into that whole type of new world, you know, fourth industrial revolution type thing.
Absolutely. I mean, Yuval Harari, all you need to do is study his speeches and writings, and you realize that, hey, they don't need us anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't need us to work in their factories. They don't need us to clean their houses. They don't need us to clean their hotels. They don't need us to work the fields. They at some point, they won't even need us, Tony, to sign up to be their guinea pigs in the military and go as cannon fodder to the front lines. They will have robots to fight the wars. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is maybe the scariest of all, you know, because we pride ourselves in this country of, oh, we have our guns. You know, that's sort of the last defense against tyranny. Well, how are you going to have a shootout with a robot and win? I don't think so. Drones are just flying robots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, they've got the potential to have a kind of motherships with hundreds and hundreds or thousands of drones launched from a mothership that's, you know, a drone in itself. And you can't, you know, you can't fight against thousands of drones. There's just no way.
No. No, I mean, if they want to take you out, they can take you out. I mean, there is absolutely no person on this earth that they couldn't take out if they really wanted to. And that includes Donald Trump. OK, I don't even buy these assassination attempts that took place on Trump. I think that's a big farce. That was a big farce meant to make him more popular, give him a martyr's complex, and sweep him into the White House for a second term, along with all of the fake lawfare that was waged against him.
Yeah.
You always just have to look at be very wary of the narratives, you know, the narratives being spun right now, even in the conservative media, are just outlandish. I mean, Alex Jones seems to have gone over to the dark side. I mean, he's now parroting the official line of the government. I never thought I'd see the day. You know, somebody must have made him a nice deal, I guess, to get him out of the bankrupt situation that he was in after big lawsuit he lost.
Yeah.
But, be very wary of the narratives. Very wary. Now, President Trump today was talking about, they discovered some torture chamber that Maduro had in Caracas, capital of Venezuela. You know, don't believe that, people. I mean, what that tells me is they're getting desperate. Their original talking points was, their original narrative was full of holes. It's breaking down, so they need some fresh talking points now. And you will see all of the conservative influencers, you know who they are, the ones with big Twitter accounts. You'll see it all over Facebook, all over X, all over Instagram. Now, they've discovered torture chambers in Caracas. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just more talking points to sway public opinion in the propaganda war. It's a one huge psyop is what it is. You can argue about what was really behind this kidnapping. But I have some news for you. One thing, I may not know exactly all of the answers, but one thing it was not done for was because he had torture chambers in Caracas. Okay. The CIA has its own torture chambers in black hole countries. During the war on terror, people were famously taken to Egypt, where there's no rules against torture. Okay. And they were tortured with the full knowledge of the CIA. And there's also an argument to be made that, you know, we know it's not about drugs because one of the biggest facilitators of drug trafficking in the world is the CIA, our own CIA.
Yeah.
And so, you know, reporters who've delved into that story have actually found themselves come to an abrupt end. Their lives come to an abrupt end. Just be wary of narratives going around by conservative influencers. Okay. I used to warn people about the mainstream corporate media. That's not enough now. You also have to be wary of the conservative media players out there right now, spinning narratives, spinning tall tales to justify and cover for the actions of the federal government.
It's interesting. I noticed in one of your articles that you've just sent out, Substack articles, that Nathan Rothschild praising Trump for taking out Maduro.
And I have a link that you can click in the article and take you right to the video and his X account where he congratulated President Trump for a job well done in Venezuela. And I think that speaks volumes.
Well, yeah, I think it does too. Some people might not see the connection, but, you know, that there you have it, the banking industry, the people funding all the technocracy and all that kind of thing, they're happy for it. And the people that in the past said, the elite's against Donald Trump and they don't like him and all that, it was all part of the dog and pony show.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, I look at Donald Trump as a closer, a closer for the globalists. He's closing the deal.
Yeah.
I mean, all of these things he's doing, there's nothing really new about them. Presidents have been intervening in foreign governments and destabilizing governments and countries for decades. We've been building data centers, maybe not at the rate we're doing now, but that didn't just start under Donald Trump and this whole technocracy thing. But, you know, Donald is great at closing a deal. He's a marketing genius.
Yeah.
He can take something that conservatives would have cried foul on if it was done by Democrats and make it sound good now that he's doing it, just by rebranding it, calling it something different. Like the 15-minute cities everybody was upset about. He's proposing the same type of developments, but he calls them freedom cities. Okay. He's a marketing whiz, a marketing genius. That is probably his biggest talent. And so people buy it. They buy it. They lap it up. They lap it up because it's their guy doing it. And he always makes it sound good. He makes it sound like a win. Everything Donald does is the best. It's the greatest. Nobody comes close. And people like to be on what? The winning side. So it plays well.
Yeah, the new golden age. That's what he's sold. The new golden age.
He comes up with all of these slogans that people love. They love that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So is there anything else you wanted to cover while we're on?
It's just so much. I mean, we've still got the war in Ukraine raging, supposedly. You know, then you can see videos of people partying in Kiev like nothing's really affecting. It almost makes you wonder just how raging the war is over there. We're supposed to believe thousands are dying every week, Ukrainians and Russians. Who knows what's actually happening? It's very difficult to get accurate information from that war. You can't believe what the Ukrainians are putting out. You can't believe what the Russians are putting out. We do know that certain key cities that had been under Ukrainian control have fallen. But just how close they are to collapsing in terms of the entire Ukrainian front, we keep hearing that it's imminent, but it never seems to happen. So you got to wonder about that. I do feel like Vladimir Putin is done with Donald Trump now. He's given him a year. He's been unable to, for whatever reason, get Ukraine to agree to a deal that is acceptable to the Russians. The Russians have very clear objectives. They don't want any Western troops in, Ukraine. They don't want Ukraine. They want a guarantee that Ukraine will never join NATO, that NATO will stop expanding eastward towards Russia's border, which it's been doing, since the late 90s. More than doubled in size and now has Russia's western flank pretty much encircled. And you add Ukraine to it, and it's game over for Russia. They've now lost all of their security. And so while it looks like Russian paranoia from our perspective, they feel like they're being hemmed in. And that's a very dangerous scenario that could lead to, I believe, at some point, World War III. And once that kicks off, it's all bets are off. It could end up with having a nuclear exchange, which is something nobody should even want to think about risking. And yet the neocons in Washington seem all too willing to go there. People like Lindsey Graham, they're actually excited about the prospect of fighting Russia. We've got a lot of bad actors in control of our governments in the West, not just in America, but throughout Europe, Canada, Australia. It's rampant. We've got leaders who don't seem to represent, I would say, the gap between what the people want and what their leaders deliver has never been larger than it is right now in the Western coalition of countries.
Well, you mentioned Australia. That's another interesting one at the moment is they had that attack by those two Muslims that shot up all these people in Bondi Beach. And instead of legislation on Islamic terrorism, what do they do? We've got to tighten the gun laws. Right. So that's exactly what they've done. They've used that as an excuse to make even tighter gun laws in Australia, which was already tight. And, you know, that's the way they do things. It's like...
Well, isn't that what happened in New Zealand? Didn't they have a mosque attack
exactly.
a few years ago?
Yeah, they did. And so they tightened our gun laws here. But Australia's gun laws are tighter than New Zealand's. They already were. And but they're going to be even more tight. So, and for example, if you're a New Zealander, and there are a lot of New Zealanders in Australia, hundreds of thousands of them, but you won't be able to own a gun in Australia unless you're an Australian citizen. So even if you're a New Zealander, you won't be allowed to have a gun in Australia. So that's my understanding of it, and things like that. Okay, so another subject, because, I mean, our time's running on, is that's real interesting at the moment is looking at what's happening in Iran.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. You know, that is a huge topic that we could do a whole separate show on.
Yeah.
But it does look like that's heating up again. The 12-day war was back in what, June of 2025?
Something like that. Yeah.
And I had said at the time that do not think for a minute that this is the end of the war. There's just going to be a months-long pause while both sides rearm, okay? I believe that Israel was, if that war had continued in June of 2025, Israel would have lost. They were running out of Patriot missile batteries. And so Benjamin Netanyahu got on the phone with Donald Trump or someone in Washington and said, hey, we need this to end. We can no longer protect ourselves. We've got a week's supply left of these Patriot missile batteries. And so that's what happened. But by no means was Netanyahu done with Iran. He's obsessed with Iran. He blames all of Israel's problems on Iran. And so that war is going to take off again. I believe that when he was here speaking with Donald Trump, I believe he celebrated New Year's Eve, bringing in the new year with Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago. I think they closed that deal as well, that they agreed that war will be reignited, and maybe they even have a date set. I don't know.
Well, unless they are able to overthrow the Iranian regime without a war, that might be their other alternative.
And I do believe that Mossad and CIA have been very, very active in that regard, trying to destabilize the regime before you go in. They would like to have to go in and just do a mop-up operation because the regime has already been weakened and destabilized. That's the hope. Will that actually be the way that it goes down? I'm not so sure. I still think Israel may have a bigger fight on its hand and may bite off a little more than it wants to chew when it comes to Iran.
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens. Obviously, well, amongst the population of Iran, a lot of them are absolutely fed up with the Ayatollahs and that whole Islamic regime. But as we've seen so many times, you know, even if that regime goes, it's like what replaces it?
That's the question, right? That is exactly the question. And that's also the open question still in Venezuela. We've got the vice president who's in charge. But she so far is not showing any signs that she's going to be particularly excited about carrying out the dictates of Donald Trump. And she is apparently a very competent leader. She is someone who has more hands-on competence than Maduro did in terms of running things. And so it will be interesting to see how that plays out, as well as in Iran.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of things to watch at the moment. And I think people would do well to be preparing themselves for a very tough year, that's going to go crazy.
And don't be afraid if you have the means, which I don't right now, you know, donations are down. I lost a major contract with the new year. where I was doing some contract writing for another conservative media outlet. But if you have the means, I would say now is the time to invest in hard assets.
Yeah.
Your dollars are not going to be worth that much. They're not that worth that much now, but they're going to be worth far less 6 months or a year from now. I'll make that prediction. And so if you want to, if you have hard assets that you think you can afford to invest in, I think that would be wise right now.
I second that. I'm also thinking the same. It's like, gee, I wish I had some money right now to put into silver or gold, you know, for example, before it becomes completely unreachable. I would love to be able to do that, but I'm not in a financial position to be able to do that at this time either. And so it's tough. But I would say if people do have the means to do that, now is exactly the time to do it, because I think the window of opportunity is going to rapidly close to be able to do that or to afford to do it. So I think that's wise advice. And So I hope hopefully your things will pick up donations wise and people subscribing to your Substack.
If
you want to
even if they can't afford to make a donation, or they could make a donation that's smaller than the cost of a subscription. I'm very open to, donating $25 or $50. Those add up. And so, a subscription is $80 a year at my Substack. And of course, those are great. But if you can't afford $80, don't feel like you can't make a smaller donation is all I'm saying.
And we're in the same boat. I mean, it's midnight, I run this 100% by donations and, every now and then you get someone very generously donating extra, but in general, the donations are down and it's, we rely on it for us to survive too. So we're in the same boat. If folks can help either you or help us through donating and that's always hugely appreciated. So having said that, where do they find you, like Leo? Where's your Substack and your website?
My Substack account can be found at leohoman.substack.com. Homan is spelled H-O-H-M-A-N-N, so two N's at the end. A lot of people think it's only one. And you can be a free subscriber. If you don't have $80 or $7 a month, you can do it either way, $7 a month or $80 for a whole year. I do have free many more free subscribers of people who either don't want to spend the money or can't afford it. And, at least do that, become a free subscriber, share my articles. That also helps. LeoHoman.com is my other website.
Well, that's the reality. I mean, I hadn't intended to go here at the end of the show, but folks, there are not that many voices like Leo's or ours or a few guests that we have on the show that are actually telling you this stuff like it is and are not choir boys for either the left or the right or, the establishment or following a role of being, controlled opposition. I think, we're genuinely doing our best to bring you the truth and outside of the square. So if you want to see Leo survive or A Minute to Midnight survive, realize that, we're only there because you help keep us there, folks. So, I'll leave it at that. But thank you, Leo. It's been great having you on the show again. I always love having a discussion with you, and I read all of your Substack articles and your website articles, and they are among the best out there. And, there's a few others, I won't mention names, that I read their articles and so on, but then they go down these strange tangents and you think, I'm not so comfortable with those people anymore. They start attacking other people in ministries or, websites and different things. It's like, oh, man, just stick to the truth. Don't, get involved in all that other stuff. And
We can disagree with each other, but when you see the personal attacks, I that's where I draw the line. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't like to see it at all, and I think it doesn't do any good for anyone's credibility to start launching into that sort of stuff. So anyway, yeah. So thanks again for being on the show. I really would love people to share this, like it, and share it widely, because I think this has been another very important discussion, Leo, to start off the year. This is the sort of stuff that people need to hear. So I do hope that people will do that. They'll like it and they'll share it. And subscribe to both of us if you're not already.
Yes, thank you so much. And pray for discernment. We live in very turbulent, chaotic times, and there's a lot of confusion out there. And the only way we're going to be able to cut through the noise and the propaganda is if we have the discernment of the Holy Spirit in us.
Absolutely. And first and foremost, I guess then people need to make sure they have a relationship with Jesus Christ and have their lives committed and dedicated to him and to, you know, the truth of the gospel. So,
amen.
Yeah, it's a crazy world and it's getting darker, and so we got to be some sort of light. And
yes,
and
Matthew 24 is the one I always go back to, where Jesus warned us the end times will be marked by basically two things: persecution of believers and very thick deception,
such that the love of most or the love of many will grow cold, will wax cold.
Yes.
So yes. We don't want to be one of those.
No.
All right. Well, I will let you go. And again, thank you. It's been great to have you on, and let's do it again soon.
Thank you, Tony. And again, Happy New Year to you and all your viewers.
Cheers, and thank you. Same.